Join Johannes, a necromancer of some little infamy, and his charismatic brother Horst in the many adventures of the Cabal brothers on the Necromancer's Deathcast. From circuses to dreamlands in turn-of-the-century never-never England, author Jonathan L. Howard brings his dry wit and exceptionally clever writing to the series of the most intense and tumultuous proportions. Rise up, all ye undead, and rejoice in the wonder that is the Necromancer's Deathcast. Welcome to the Necromancer's Deathcast, brought to you by Free Flow Rambling. This is episode 3.2, Fat Free, where we are discussing the book Johannes Cabal, The Necromancer. My name is Tanzin, and I am joined by Amber.
Hello.
And Jess.
Hey.
Chapter 2. Cabal finds himself in the Flatlands, where he is forced to make short work of two miscreants. He manages to make his way to the abandoned train line, where he finds the remains of a carnival train. Satan's avatar hints to him how to get his start, and Cabal quickly goes about collecting staff. So chapter 2, in which Cabal practices his map reading and meets an old acquaintance.
We start off in the dreary, dreary landscapes of the Flatlands.
We didn't bring it up too much in the last episode, but the way that JLH names his chapters is just an extra level of sarcasm, too, thrown on. There isn't really a specific narrator, you know? Like, it's not all coming from Cabal, right? You get everyone's opinions and thoughts and things as we go. And so I like how the narrator in and of itself is his own character, because even the chapter titles can be insulting.
Do you know I've been modeling unintentionally until I started doing the reread for this, that I have been doing the chapter summaries for our Dresden podcast in the same style. I have been doing, this is the chapter 22 and 23 in which Dresden.
Tongue in cheek, this idiot.
And a really, really dry sarcasm when I do it. And I,
where does
I realize
that come from?
This is where it's been my influence from.
Ha ha ha.
Yep.
Busted.
Hilarious. So a dreary, depressing place, and Cabal was very surprised suddenly to be in the middle of it.
Yes, not unlike Saskatchewan.
Ouch.
Bam.
Hey, half my family's from Saskatchewan.
Yeah, we know.
Oh!
Hey! Making, high five.
Making friends wherever we go.
Us and Cabal.
We mean no ill intent towards any Saskatchewanians.
We absolutely do.
Yeah, my sister lives there.
They don't have internet. They can't hear this.
Wow. So he'd been unceremoniously translocated to this location.
He's wheeling on the spot like somebody who had walked into the wrong toilet.
I like how he puts his Gladstone bag down, beats the last few whiffs of sulfurous smoke out of his clothes with his hat.
Yes.
One of the issues when you go to hell.
You know, come
some places are covered
like
in
sulfur.
Cat hair, others sulfur.
Excuse the rotten egg smell. It's not the water in Saskatchewan. Oh, come on. Anybody from Saskatchewan knows that joke. It's heavy in sulfur, I swear.
I love the description of how he curses that he's there, managing to both be erudite. Erudite and uncouth in the same instant.
We should just have a podcast where we learn how to say words.
Right?
Listen to our pronunciation of stuff.
Faust.
Faust.
Was I saying it wrong?
It's okay.
Oh, you guys could have told me.
It's okay. You don't have a German accent. I'll let you through.
Faust.
Das ist gut, ja.
Yeah.
It's my attempt at a German accent.
That's okay. I'll just go ahead and go into the editing and re-record it.
Right?
Just the Siri voice pronouncing words every 5 minutes over top of ours. Insert robotic voice now.
Yeah. Just you wait, because I might actually do it.
Like, our next blog post will be a glossary of terms the author used that we had to look up.
We don't have time for a 20-hour episode.
Fact. It'll be a blog post.
We're looking for book recommendations that is about our intelligence level.
Hey, speak for yourself.
I am.
Dear JLH, yes, there are intelligent readers out there.
We try to pretend that we are.
Hey!
Is it working?
Hilarious.
Cabal finally finds on the map the Red Cross to assume his destination, only after a theatrical sigh.
But isn't that a show? Showman?
Right?
Is it the description of who he is as a showman, though?
If a tree falls in a forest and there's no one around to hear it, did it really happen? If there's no one around to witness your long-suffering sigh, what's the point?
If a necromancer arrives in the desert and sighs, is there anyone who hears it?
In this case, Dennis and Denzel are.
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh my god, I laughed when I read the first line so hard. The two men whom he caught in pantomime of stealth were of disreputable appearance.
A pantomime of stealth?
Yeah.
Like, nice try, boys. Nice try.
I just think of like a Looney Tunes cartoon where they're like...
like when Elmer Fudd's chasing after the after Bugs Bunny. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very fitting description of them because... As it gets into it, you know, they're not used to company, so they've been waiting a long time to get the jump on someone.
unsuspecting prey.
Yes. There was a sense that if you opened an illustrated dictionary and looked up disreputable, there would be a picture of one or the other of them. Possibly both. After all, if there was some minor detail or reprehensible untrustworthiness that couldn't be found in one of them, it was certainly present in his partner.
And here's where I get to plug the purchase of the audiobook over all others, because I can't remember who the narrator is for the audiobooks. But like his switching of the accents for Denzel and sorry, what's the other dude's name?
Dennis.
Denzel and Dennis is actually really funny to listen to. Like a British person actually reading out like the her, gentlemen, her, and sort of the tall one, Dennis. Like, he actually goes through the vocals.
Oh, that's cool.
It is entertaining. He really does a good job of it. I'll have to look and see who actually does the audiobook narration.
I started the first chapter with the audiobooks, but I fell asleep by the time I got to
See, whereas I listen to audiobooks because I can actually, you know, do dishes and clean house and multitask because sitting still for longer than 10 minutes. I mean, hey. You got me for an hour on these podcasts, and that's
and we are thankful.
For this, I can last for an hour or so.
Yeah. So Dennis and Denzel also, you know, as well as the Looney Tunes, really remind me of like the Tweedledee and Tweedledum and Alice in Wonderland, where it's just like, you know, sitting on the rock, not doing anything, waiting to cause problems, but really just nothing until the opportunity is there,
right? And, like, Cabal's reaction to it, too. Like, he was getting irritated. He was on a tight schedule and just wished they'd hurry up and mug him. Yeah. Just get on with it.
So this is my other point. I don't know if I'm jumping ahead of your notes, but as they try and rob him, he's, like, pulling things out of his bag. And he's like, well, you don't want this because it's useless to you. And you don't know how to use this, so it's useless to you. And this won't be worth much if you don't know how to use it. So you don't want this, right? And he's going through and he's going through and he's going through. But this is the man who... isn't a showman and isn't a people person and blah, 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 going through this whole rigmarole until he pulls out his gun.
Maybe it's a sleight of hand, right?
That might be a bit too ahead, but my point is that for all of he is not a carnival, fun, theatrical person, he's absolutely is.
Bank teller, skull, surgical equipment, files of... test batch 247, and then the Weebly.
And he very nicely lies that it's a clay skull. Why? What do you care? Tries not to freak him out too much. You're in the middle of the desert and are about to shoot them dead.
Well, and the interaction that they have, like when he first, you know, he talks about they're trying to charge him the toll. And he says, well, I didn't see a toll gate. You know, like, there can't be any toll if there isn't a toll gate.
There ain't no toll gate.
Right?
And how can there be a toll?
So it's like, logic's once again,
the fuck out of them right away.
Right? And that's what I'm saying. Like, okay, so can you be hyper-logical, pragmatic, and still be a showman at the same time? Right? Like, is it... Is it the ends justify the means, or is it really just for show?
But again, this back and forth banter that he's purposely creating, he knows what he's doing, and that is showmanship. And I think, you know, and again, like this whole Toll thing, and it's very funny with the two, because they're just like, oh my God, like we've barely ever even needed a plan A because we never run into anyone. And now we needed a plan B. Like, what the fuck? Right. But that's very much like, you know, say what you want about him being this pragmatic scientist, but he's on the ball all the time. Like, he's ready to go, raring to go. Like,
he's got very smart wit.
Yeah. And part of that can just become natural to people. Like, you are just quick on your feet when presented the opportunity to be a sarcastic little bastard. But at the same time, you know, he's not as dry and pragmatic if he's got that capability, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I like this quote. Cabal, who spoke barefaced liar like a native when the situation called for it. That sort of, that's again, with like that really quick wit.
Well, you think even like another character who is vastly different from Cabal, but in the general, like, very like, I'm smart and I don't play around with jokes and understand why someone wouldn't want to be. Think Sheldon from The Big Bang, right? Ooh. He's not that quick, fast, witty or anything like that. The show is a comedy show, so there is funny things and lines in there, but it's not the same wit that Cabal has, you know? Like, he is very much like, well, I don't understand. Well, that's not funny. Why would you even make that joke? He's a lot more to that strict, like, no, no, no. Whereas Cabal still does a little bit more of the dance.
Right, right. He's not just like...
I don't get it. That's not funny.
The straight man funny. He actually does like throw a zinger and then land it.
Which is, I think, also a little bit of that British humor too, where his side of it comes through versus maybe American humor. In the same way, you know, obviously we can understand each other's jokes, obviously, but there is a little bit... perhaps it's a different British kind of humor. It's a different kind of landing of the joke than American humor, so it might be easier for one character to play into it than another.
A little more dry.
Yeah. But
that makes sense.
You know?
Yeah.
Like Melba toast.
Well, it's less, it's like it's you develop an affinity for the character because of the humanity. Whereas I think, you know, if you're comparing and contrasting with someone like Sheldon, you know, in the American humor, it's more you're almost laughing at him, at the not necessarily at him, sort but like two-dimensional at the sake character. Of him, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. like it's sort of like, oh, his foolishness and oh, his pragmatism, oh, his logic. Whereas like Cabal's pragmatism and logic,
it's more what endears you to him, exactly, that separates, right? Yeah.
So
well, it lacks. He doesn't lack that depth that the American humor would say have because his characters.
Ooh. Yeah, and part of that is presentation between a TV show and a book. Right? And I think also, like, we only have Cabal to get attached to, whereas in the show, they're trying to present to you four characters at once. But I still feel like, even if you watch, like, the British version of The Office and the American version of The Office, I'll be very quick to say that I don't find the British version of The Office funny. Like, I love the American version. I think it's hilarious. But when I watch certain scenes, a lot of the show is not equal. They do their own thing. They change characters' names. They've got the somewhat similar setup, but they mostly don't follow the same plots every episode. But when you do watch side-by-side scenes of the same joke, but in a British humor, and I don't find the British one funny at all.
See, and I find when you compare it, especially in those shows, and we're totally going off on a tangent but like when you compare the Office British and that, you're looking at Ricky Gervais versus, what's his name?
No,
you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, of course.
The actor. When you compare and contrast them, it's sort of like Ricky Gervais has Carol.
Yes.
That's it. Awesome. So like Ricky Gervais has this like natural anxiety about him, right? So it's like this nervous energy, but very, very dry. So he's kind of that bumbling goofball that, but at the same time, I think the Steve Carroll character, it's sort of like, he may know he's a goofball.
Fair enough. For me, the part that I'm thinking of is more like the relationship between Jim and Dwight versus the UK version. Mm. Like, I find, you know, the kind of a more lovable goofball in the American one, whereas in the British one, it's like totally like they're not friends and they don't like each other and there is no love there.
Right.
It just seems a lot more...
So maybe that might be just a little bit of a chemistry thing between the actors, or is it just like the actual writing?
Well, I think they're good actors in the UK one.
The asshole best friend seems to be a British thing, though.
Which is Fair enough. And again, like, I didn't get very far in the UK one. I watched the first episode and was like, this isn't funny, and never tried again. So potentially if I'd started with season two or three, there would have been more camaraderie on the set and between the characters, right? But I'm just saying, like, for me personally, like, watching the exact same joke that has the most similar script between the shows, it's a scene when, like, the stapler's put in Jell-O. Just watching those two different sets play out that joke, it's just the UK one wasn't funny to me at all.
Yeah.
Whereas in this case, I would say that Cabal is a lot more funny than Sheldon is with his, like, bazinga one-liner, right?
Right.
It's just a certain presentation in those different pragmatic ways sometimes lands and sometimes doesn't, right, for me anyways, right? So all of that tangent to say that I do think Cabal is funny, and he's a load of shit when he said he isn't.
Well, like you say, he lies to get what he needs, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the bold-faced liar.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So Cabal uses logic against them. I think, I don't know if we mentioned.
Spins around in a circle, confuses them a little.
Yeah. Dennis shook his head again, and then when his cognitive process half-heartedly kicked in, the sensation of thinking was like worms in a jam jar, and he wished it would stop.
I feel that.
I tried to envision what that feels like. Right. I was like, does it? I enjoy thinking. Probably a little too much.
Yeah, but your thought process doesn't feel like wriggly,
right?
Through
Jess just like shuddered.
It's a gross depiction, but I get it. My head is always filled with cotton. There's nothing up there. What's Corpse Bride, where she's got that little like tapeworm in her ear?
Oh God.
Yes.
Right. It was very visceral sort of description, even though it didn't mean to be.
Yeah, it's gross.
Yeah.
Not a fan.
It affected me. Speaking so much so that I wrote it down.
Changed who I am. Traumatized me.
Right. And speaking of gross, this is where we get into like him taking out the stuff from his bag, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and for me, like this, I interpret this as he's showing them he's a scientist, right? Like, I got nothing to steal. I got just crap, right?
Mm-hmm. A scientist, moaned Dennis. He put his hand on Denzel's shoulder. He won't have no money. Come on, Denzel, let's go.
Right? So it's less about showmanship, more of like, I am no threat to you, and I am of no benefit to you, ultimately, in terms of what I'm carrying.
Which is great if he'd stop there, but pulling the gun out last is the part that makes it all of a show.
Right?
If you just pull the gun out first, because his, like, I mean, he kills them right then and there.
Yeah, he lowers their defenses.
But
he's lowering their defenses. When
you're the only one with a gun.
Look, it's the Mary Poppins bag. I got nothing here but fun. I wish they just
hurry up and mug me.
Boom. Like,
like, who are you trying to convince? Like, oh, I have to wait for them to be mean to me before I'm allowed to kill them. Like, what is his hold up? Because he's a funny guy.
Oh, yeah.
Jonathan L. Howard is getting paid by the word. No. That was Charles Dickens, though. He got paid by the word. That's why his shit doesn't end.
Some authors do.
Yeah.
Some authors do. That's interesting. Yeah. I didn't know that.
That's why his shit didn't end. Because, like, way back in the day, stories were kind of published, like, chapter by chapter, right? So people would be waiting months in between printing presses for these. So sometimes, yeah, like, the reason you get a description over and over and over again is because every word paid.
So it's like a TV subscription.
Totally, yep.
Huh. Yeah, I like that. I did have a good laugh when the Weebly 577 finally comes out. And, well, that's got to be worth something, eh, Denzel? He turned around, see Denzel running as fast as his fat, like, fat little legs could carry him.
Denzel know what time it is.
Bye-bye. Sadly, flat little desert.
Have
not
you
doing much.
Ever looked up the like how big the Weebly cannon of a gun is?
Cabal is packing.
Well, here's my question. Okay, so now going back in time, I asked Tanzan this about files of test batch 247.
Mm-hmm.
Now, am I reading too much into this? Because there was experiment 472, was it?
Yeah, it was very close to that. It was 47 something.
Yeah, I think it was 472.
Yeah.
So, like, do we have a thing for these numbers, JLH? I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too much into it.
And especially because, yeah, like, apparently this is later on. So yeah, are the numbers, like you said, counting down or?
Well, for a man who does everything by Dewey Decimal System for his own bloody, you know, book collection, you would think that he's got some sort of, you know.
Right.
Series of classifications of his experiments and,
well, and
the numbering.
I would imagine that they're going linearly.
What is this one
but
right
I think
now?
That GLH
247?
This is he takes out test batch 247.
Yeah.
I just googled it. 247 is church in the Dewey Decimal System.
Oh.
Well, the dead shall arise in the church as well.
Oh. Are we
They have a couple of resurrections.
But like oh. You think he's doing his experiments by Dewey Decimal as well?
I don't know. I just googled what the Dewey Decimal one was.
See, I was just curious because if our original, what was it? It was Blustery Day, wasn't it?
Yeah. 472 was etymology of classical Latin.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
Not sure that it relates. But
like if we're going chronologically and this story follows the short stories, he's not going number sequential.
No. Right, but he does actually say it's something different because this is a test batch 247.
So you could have test batch A, test batch B, test batch C,
and the other one is different experiment number.
Right.
Oh, fair.
All right. I'm reading too much into it, I'm sure.
Plus a test, you know, it might have been sitting as big for a decade waiting for the right moment to use it.
True story.
If you make, you know, 400 test batches of 247, it might take you a while to get through them all.
Never know when you need a good batch 247.
Never know, right? Well, some of these things.
Keep some on hand.
I'm just thinking, you know, some of these
what's the expiration
recipes
date?
Are so egregious to go through. I probably would make a lot at once if I could.
Totally.
When's the next time I'm going to have a dreaded skull blustery wind in my office? I don't know.
Batch cooking.
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Smart way to conjure is batch cooking.
Meal prep.
For
every necromancer.
Meal prep for your experiments. Oh, dear. Yeah, that sounds a little dark.
There's
too dark for
so
dinner.
There's only so much, you know, radium to go around.
Totally.
Mm-hmm.
While I have this dead body, we as well use the most of it that we can.
Well, we were just saying in our other podcast, you know, you want to make silver bullets out of an alloy. Make as many as you can because you've only got so much silver.
So Cabal is finally at the proposed spur line close to the X on the map. We find out that Dennis and Denzel have been reanimated using the batch 247. And these continue to provide entertainment even in death.
And it worked very quickly. Just a little couple drops or something. He doesn't exactly describe what 247 does, but they are alive very quickly with near no effort from Cabal, it seems. Like
yeah, they have a little bit of thought process. Not much. Mm-hmm. Not that they had much to begin with.
I was going
to
say, it's probably equal.
Yeah. But their motor functions are wildly exaggerated.
In my head, I envision them as like scarecrows.
Oh, that's a good way to think of them.
That's kind
of
how I see that movement. And yeah.
Yeah. If only they had a brain.
Absolutely. And so we get to these trees, and I actually really like the way that the forest and the trees are being described. And at one point, in a nearby tree that might have been an elm before being regularly watered with LSD, a carrion crow sat and regarded Cabal keenly. Like, who describes it like that? Watered with LSD. This is the tree that the results.
I don't even know what to imagine.
It's twisted. It's twisted in my head.
I found a great picture that I thought was of what the train line might have looked like, with the exception that this picture has a lot of leaves. But if it had been without, I'm going to post it on the website. But the whole train itself is this sort of rusted out thing. This, he said quietly, must be the place. It is so melodramatic. That was a lovely moment.
Mm-hmm. So he does like describe this train. Really cool. It is not like, okay, so if you've ever read Black Beauty, right, they're considered to be like, they're referred to as monsters in the distance, right? Because the horses don't know what the fuck a train is, but they're like, it's loud and fast and scary and we don't like it. Ooh. So the first time I ever read Black Beauty, and like they're describing monsters, I was like, the fuck is going on in this book about horses, right? I was legitimately confused. I didn't pick up that it was trains. So for me, again, when he is first like talking about this like locomotive, he was just like, look at this massive monster. And I was like, not again. What's in here?
Is this from a horse perspective? Wait. What book am I reading?
It's all connected.
Yeah, there's the description of the train is quite wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Despite any number of tempting perches for local incontinent birds, the only dirt on it was the coating of a curious black rust that came off in his fingers like a very coarse soot. Cabal sniffed at it cautiously and was instantly put in mind of energetic evenings down in the cellar, sawing up the evidence and putting it in the furnace before the police arrived. He pushed his tinted spectacles up his nose and blinked thoughtfully behind them. What exactly does this thing run on? He hoped it was wood or coal. It would be much more convenient.
What is he up to in his spare time? That's all I'm asking from that passage. Like
necromancer.
Right? Like sawing up the evidence and putting it into the furnace. This is what he thinks about when he sees a train coal box. Like, what twisted life do you live, buddy? Like, before the police come.
I think that's a supernatural reference, like, to the train itself, that it's just so dark and macabre that
even the animals are avoiding it.
The smell of the rust elicits these sort of really horrific memories for him. Well, not horrific. Horrific for everybody else.
Yeah, sounds like it's pretty okay. It sounds like it's just another day in the life. I'll just be honest.
Honestly, if you're going to be a necromancer, you've got to be opportunistic. So, yeah.
A corpse doesn't come by just every day, right?
Well, and if you need to get rid of a corpse, you need to be willing to do what it takes to get rid of it.
Before the cops show up, mm-hmm. at least, yeah. And I think we do get a little more of that sort of historical background as we go through it. There's one point where, and again, this might be a bit of a spoiler into the book, but it's like, you know, somebody thinks he's not worth it. And he's like, well, you know, all these mobs chasing me and, you know, numerous police constables and, you know, would say otherwise, essentially.
Like, whoa, do you know how many wanted lists I'm on?
Right? Like, what do you mean I'm not worth it? Yeah. Like, I disagree.
Oh, man.
A crow attacks Dennis. And I really liked this sort of Cabal simply just tells the bird to stop and to come here. And it does. It not only does he perch on his shoulder, but he tells it not to shit on his shoulder. Cronk, says the crow, which may have meant, yes, master. It could equally have meant, you'll have to catch me first, bugger lungs. Either way, it kept his sphincters tight.
Well, when a necromancer Lovely. Tells you not to shit on his shoulder, I'd pay attention.
Mm. Yeah.
You know?
But I think, I don't know, is that the lack of his soul that he has this sort of command of crows? Because crows are supposed to be...
Yeah, is it crows or is it animals? Is it birds or is it crows?
Because crows are supposed to be the messengers of the dead.
I was going
to
say, in other like his previous short stories, he referred. Does he not have a discussion with a crow in another one that we did?
Not yet.
Am I wrong? No. Okay. Maybe again, not I'm yet. Fast forwarding. But conversation with crows, it seems to be one of those natural magical acts that, you know, because he's a necromancer, it kind of grants him, as you say, access to this messenger.
Yeah, there's like the familiar territory background, right? But yeah, I was just wondering, because like you said, like messenger of the dead, or like, you know, a group of them is called a murder. So
yeah,
it's just one of those things that I'm just like, is it just the crow?
Do you know there's actually some, there is some background to that as well. I've actually got a tattoo of crows on my back, and looking it up, it had to do with a poem that a friend of mine once told me, which was that depending on the number of crows you saw, and she was Scottish, this was from her background. But she said that depending on how many you saw, it meant something. So,
in your whole life?
Well, no, like at a certain point. So the message depends on how many you see. So one is bad news, two is for good. One is bad news, two is for mirth, three is a wedding, four is a birth, five is a something. And it goes on and on until like 12 is a murder. And essentially that's where we get that murder of crows from.
Oh, interesting.
So I happen to have a tattoo of two crows for mirth. Also means joy. But yeah.
Interesting.
But, like, that's actually from a poem, I believe, like, historically, that depending on an understanding, I guess, folklore. So, here's where we meet the little old man who comes to cabal. And this is sort of hearkening back to that Satan's avatars, that which is creating all the problems for Cabal's experiments, not having a soul. So all of the characters that were quote unquote randomly introduced at beginning start to make reappearances.
Well, and the character itself, the little old man, was not in any real sense little or man. He was certainly, however, very old. He was the embodiment of an archetype. The old codger with the flat cap and the gray beard. He cackled, rolled his own foul-smelling cigarettes, and when, on form, he could be relied on to dribble. He was the exact sort of person that makes youth fashionable. He was also one of Satan's numerous avatars, fragments of personalities and random thoughts that had taken into form in the mortal realm. They allowed him to maintain a steady background hum of elemental evil in the world while he concentrated on more important things down in hell. His cribbage game, for example.
Okay, 2 points in that entire thing that made me laugh. First of all, the sort of person that makes youth fashionable.
Love that. Love that. No offense to old people, but I've certainly met a few that.
I have an uncle that this describes to a T, including the hat. And he instead of doing the rolled cigarettes, he used to do rolled cigarettes, but then he started to do chew.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Adds to the character, yeah, that's for sure.
Old man with the big white grizzled beard.
Right. Yeah. And then, yes, his cribbage game, for example. Yeah. Like, these are much more important things.
So the little old man produces an hourglass with powder in it. I thought this was an interesting way to show the passage of time and the supernatural aspect of it, because it shows a small dusting in the bottom, so it didn't matter if you turned it up upside down or not. It was always this steady stream, but only a light dusting in the bottom.
Ooh. So what does that mean to you?
That Satan likes his special effects.
Nothing is final.
Right.
That it doesn't follow the...
Well, is this the part where it's like where he's talking about how the powder actually defies gravity and like you can turn it all sorts of ways and makes a cool party trick?
Yeah. He's like, I'm going to have a soiree just to do that. He's like, you don't have any friends. Exactly.
Exactly.
Oh, man. So Cabal is resistant as he sees no evidence of the carnival of discord on his side. The little old man berates him for his lack of imagination, shows him the signs of all the previous acts. Oh, yes, he said over his shoulder. They'll come from miles around for this. Roll up, roll up. See the world's largest collection of antediluvian signage. Grasp at the decrepitude. Be astounded by the grammar. A fascinating show rivaled only in the lint in your navel. I'll have to fight them off with a stick.
And is this the part with this is the part where it talks about like the use of exclamation points, like with the whole grammar? Like, oh my gosh, I laughed so hard. I actually read an article, funny enough, just this week about the use of exclamation points and how essentially it was the carnivals and that kind of writing, that sensational sort of magazine ad, you know, out in the public forum that they started using exclamation points. And it was talking about how in today's day, fascinatingly enough, depending on the audience and who's writing, the use of exclamation points are perceived in certain ways. So for example, women will use exclamation points more often than men will. And that men will perceive the use of exclamation points as not as intelligent. It's more sort of like sensational, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So it was, I wish I could remember where to find that article, but it was like, essentially it was a business article and talking about whether or not you should use exclamation points within your like business writing or serious writing. And it's interesting to me that then I read this part in this book about like, you know, the shoddy grammar of like using these like highly sensational exclamation points to advertise a see, roll up, join.
Well, I don't know if it has anything to do with it 100%, but part of this whole like sensationalizing, like throw an exclamation point in there to build up excitement quick. I said earlier, like Charles Dickens was paid by the word. Well, newspapers in America used to charge by the letter. So that's why a lot of American words have dropped the U and double lettering, because it costs too much to spell words properly.
Like a neighbor.
Essentially, right? So they dropped a lot of the double L's or the double O's or the U's, things that they didn't want to pay for, essentially. And that's why American spelling is so different. It was cheaper. Ooh. So I wonder if the exclamation use was also like build up excitement without needing as many words, you know? Like,
totally.
Just that's go, cool. go, go, you know?
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
And actually, originally in historical literature, the article also said further to that, that it was like, it was used, it was originally introduced, and I can't remember which author first started using it, but like you see the original sort of instances of exclamation point in things like Moby Dick, where you have to shout commands and you have to be heard, right? So, lo, he cried, right? Like it's the lo that gets the exclamation point. Fictional
setting that brought it, because
yeah.
You know, before then, you wouldn't have needed that intensity.
Yeah, well, and like having to write something and grab people's attention, mm-hmm. it's like it started off in literature, but then made its way into the advertising. And
Interesting.
That sort of carnival sideshow just took it and ran with it, that whole culture. And
cool. Yeah. Yep.
See the naked lady. Hear the wonderful sounds and sights.
The loggy.
Yes.
The dog boy.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes.
Skobal is dismayed that he has no staff, which the little old man tells him he's provided with. He shows them bones and hair and rolls of skin, and then he disappears.
Be creative.
Gross.
Be creative.
Gross.
Make your own staff. I love that idea. I wish that could work. Like, you know, I think I need to have some help with cleaning the house this week, so I think I'm just going to make a staff.
Normally it's like, oh, if you don't have any flesh at home, store-bought is fine. It's like the exact opposite.
Beyond Meat, the new person. Oh, sorry. Wrong.
Too We're dark. On to you, A&W.
Too dark. Too dark for podcasting. Too dark for a necromancer's podcast. Sorry, Deathcast.
Stick to the branding.
So yes, the two banter back and forth.
Yeah. Well, and that's another point that gets brought up too, is that like Cabal is a little bit like petulant about like how like pissing people off. He's like, I'm not going to be very popular if I'm stealing souls. And it's like, dude. Right. Dude.
Yeah, are you working towards a popularity vote?
Yeah, like probably you already not. Weren't.
Ostracized yourself.
Yeah. It's just like this started off with a necromancer of
little infamy.
Cabal ties these items together and intones, I invoke thee using a little bit of Satan's influence, his blood. The items come together as a painfully thin man. Lovely the little description of the hair trying desperately to connect to the skull to only fail miserably, but it tried. Oh, poor hair.
My question is, why did he use Satan's blood for this? Does it get explained later on? And I forgot, because like, wasn't he able to do this without Satan's blood?
I don't think so. No? I think he had to use Satan's influence to be able to.
But if he's a necromancer, wasn't he invoking already? How is this his first body? Why else would he have made the deal with Satan in the first place?
Maybe it's the quality of the spell, because these the carnival people, at least Bones,
seem pretty intelligent.
Whereas the level that
he's got enough right
now with Dennis and Denzel.
Fair enough. Because I was going to say, this seemed very like a waste to me right off the bat to use it on just a servant, but maybe. Maybe, you know.
Well, but Bones becomes one of his sort of main sidekicks. So I think maybe Tanzan is right with the quality.
If it came with the quality, then the
resurrection that the Satan's blood enables. That's my theory. I'm going to go with it. You know, like, you can make a bunch of dumbass scarecrows, which, you know, is how I envision Denzel and Dennis. Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, if you want
good quality
minions requires blood, perhaps.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Sort of speak, because that's all he's got is one drop.
Yep.
To be able to fuel this whole thing.
Just slightly diminished. It was not the whole drop, so clearly he gets to use this a few more times, because a drop I would imagine would go fast, but it specifically said that it was only slightly diminished.
See, and maybe I missed the point where, like, Cabal got access to Satan blood. Where
Satan gave it to him.
Yeah.
With his,
I missed
like
that part.
Along with the contract or like the file itself.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because like, yeah, Cabal's that. Like, why the fuck do I need this? And he's like, well, like the carnival like is going to take work. It's not just ready to go.
Right. So it's just a little friendly assistance.
Yeah.
Essentially. Yeah.
Got Gives it. Him a leg up because it's already in disarray.
Well, there you go. There's your answer.
Yeah,
I hope so. I would just save it for something more worthwhile than a butler.
Personally. I had a good chuckle that Bones is so dismayed. As soon as he's made, he runs and searches for any sort of
reflection
because he's pissed because he's made him the skinniest man in the world. Is Cabal neglected to use fat in the summoning?
Mm-hmm. And Cabal gets defensive too. He's like, well, people don't normally use fat in summoning spells. But still kind of thinks to himself, maybe next time, that's an overslight.
I summoned you. That's just the way you turned up. Don't presume to blame me for any physical shortcomings you might display.
I was being sarcastic, said Bones. You are being tiresome.
My egotistical friend, you'll live only 1 year. It doesn't matter. Let's go.
Right?
Yeah.
I love the banter between those two already. Like, yeah. It's just quick, quick, quick.
Right.
Yep. It's if we're gonna, you know, refer to him as like a butler, I kind of reminds me of Batman and Alfred.
Mm.
Every time Batman is like, "Don't do this," and Alfred's like, "Bitch, you can tell me what to do."
Cabal asks Bones which of the adverts would be the most successful, as he has no idea what's gonna work. Bones is unable to help as he is quote walking dust.
Well, and this is where I think I'm going to disagree with you on the whole, like, Cabal as a showman. He doesn't know what he's doing. How could he really effectively be a true showman if he doesn't even know how to put together a basics of a carnival? No?
Mm.
No? No?
Listen, just because you're not a ringmaster doesn't mean you're not a clown. Like, it's maybe running a circus isn't his forte, but it doesn't mean that he's not a performer.
He's good at the short-term improv, I think.
Mm.
But he doesn't, because of his lack of social skills,
again,
of his hyper-focus.
I'm more willing to put it just on the fact that he's witty and in the moment he's willing to do it rather than being his entire personality all the time. But it is a nice camaraderie between the two. Like, I don't know people. Like, I'm dead. I don't know people. You're alive and I still don't know people.
Yeah. Well, he says, Cabal replies conclusively, I don't understand people either. I'll just have to get my advice from somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then he thinks off into the distance and he says, I think I know just a person.
Yeah.
Well, and then here to instantly squash you, he then immediately hands off a million and one things that need to be done before his return. I don't know how to run a carnival, but while you're here, clean this and sweep that and do that and prepare this and paint that.
Which, you know, is a much more valuable use of a butler. Sometimes the butler isn't the creative director of the show. He's just the sign painter and cleaner upper.
Right. So
always depends.
He commands the crow to come with him and tells Bones to
watch the other two.
watch the other two, and that the other two are to listen to Bones, and gives him instructions to paint a name on the first broad-sided car. But we don't know what that is quite yet.
The
chapter ends. So this concludes our episode 3.2, Fat Free. Thank you for listening. You can find us online at freeflowrambling.com and necromancers.ca. There we have links to our other podcasts, social media, and other fun tidbits. Please subscribe if you like what you're hearing, and please consider supporting us through Patreon to keep the undead alive and see more content. We are Free Flow Rambling. And remember, reanimation is trending.